Welcome to Education Suspended, a podcast focused on exploring, engaging, and dialoguing with those in education who are passionate about changing the status quo and evolving the archaic system we have inherited.
Hey everyone, welcome to Education Suspended. Jessica Pfeiffer here. I hope you're doing well, and as always, I hope you're finding time and space for you to take care of you. Let's jump into today's episode. So I think it was back in April or May of 2023. I was scrolling through Instagram like I do so often when I need a quick little break, which, you know, I should probably find other things to do. But regardless, I was scrolling through Instagram and I saw this video on PBS titled A Brief But Spectacular Take on Teacher Burnout. And I watched it. It was short. It was maybe 4 minutes. And I actually then watched it again. There was something so amazing about this interview, so raw, it was so real. And the teacher was just so vulnerable about the reality of what it feels like for a lot of educators right now in education. And so I said to myself, hey, we need to talk to this teacher. And y'all, it worked out. That's who we talked to today. We talked to Dr. Michaela DeSimone, who was the teacher on that Brief But Spectacular episode. And she just brings us to it real. I think there were some parts of it that were just really heartbreaking to hear, but it was nothing new. And then there were some parts of it that were just a reminder of all the work that we do and how important it is and our continued need to push the system forward and to advocate for our educators, for those of you out there that are doing this good work. So I'm extremely grateful for Michaela's time and for her willingness to just to share her story and take a deeper dive. I hope this episode resonates with you. And I hope, again, like I just said, we continue to find ways to restore and repair the experience that so many educators are going through. All right, y'all. Thanks for listening. Thanks for sharing all the things that I say every episode. You're probably like, listen, Pfeiffer, we get it by now. But I've got to say it. Just got to keep saying it. Okay, everyone sit back and enjoy Education Suspended with Dr. Michaela DeSimone. All right, all right.
Hi!
Hi!
The star of the hour.
There she is.
Hi, guys. So nice to meet you. I'm Michaela.
Hi, Michaela. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, my God. Of course. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Steve just got on right before you did. He goes, now, wait a minute. How do you know her? I'm like, we've been best friends for years.
And I just watched you on PBS. So that's what I got.
There you go, Steve. There you go. Yeah, we go all the way back to that.
We go way back. But that was impressive. And then I said, I don't need to see any more. I just want to listen now.
Oh, Steve, thank you. I appreciate that.
Hopefully you're not a Jets fan.
I am, Steve.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well,
it was a big day for me. It was a big day.
What happened?
Well, we were looking forward to having Aaron Rodgers as a quarterback because...
Just know I'm a Packers fan. Just know that. So
you know what, Steve? I'm currently living in Boston. So, a little out of my element. Not going to lie to you guys. But we were looking forward to Aaron Rodgers. So excited. Everyone's like, oh my God, thank God. We're finally going to have like a quarterback that we can rely on. Within the first 5 minutes, tears his Achilles heel. Yep. Again, as Jets fans, like, we're used to being demoralized. Like, it's a rough fandom to be a part of. And that happened, and we were like, are you kidding me?
I just want you to know there's not one Packer fan happy that Aaron Rodgers got hurt.
You know what? I get that, Steve. You know, at least we have that together. The Jets and the Packers can come together. Our fans can come together over that. Everyone's upset.
I don't know much about the Jets, except they're one of the gangs in West Side Story.
Very good. Not opposite of the Sharks.
Yeah, opposite of the Sharks.
Exactly. That's all you need to know. You're done. You're good.
Perfect. I knew I was going to be successful in life. Gosh, I love this. So clearly we're gonna talk about other stuff.
I'm ready.
Perfect. All right. Well, we start all of our podcasts the same. And so we'll start this one just like we do. We'll have you say hello and introduce yourself to our listeners. Talk about what you do, how you got there. And then if you wouldn't mind, we'd love it when our guests kind of reflect on their own experiences as a student. And if there's any connection to your now and what you do and why you do it. And then we'll just see where we go from there.
Absolutely love it. Hi, my name is Dr. Michaela DeSimone.
I am currently working in diversity, equity, and inclusion at Boston University. I was formerly a teacher for 9 years. I started out at a private boarding school teaching high school while I was also getting my master's in the science of education. And from there, I moved to an ABA classroom where I was working in a K through 4 room with special needs students, mostly nonverbal. And then from there, I moved to my final role as a teacher, which was at a charter middle school where I taught 6th grade English for about 6 years. So this is my first time out of the classroom. These are my first months not being in a classroom or not going to the first day of school since I was 6 years old. So this past couple of weeks have low-key been kind of emotional, like big ones for me, because I definitely didn't want to leave the classroom. It was not something that I really set out to do. I don't think anybody gets an education getting ready to leave education. We're kind of like a life or career. But I had to leave because the state of where I was working, it made it really difficult to be a teacher, both mentally, physically, emotionally, in pretty much every sense of the world. It was difficult. And I saw myself becoming the teacher I never wanted to be. The teacher who, when I had first started teaching, I was like, oh my God, I'll never be like them. They're exhausted. They don't like the kids. They don't know why they're there. And then I saw myself becoming that. And I was like, this is a problem because that's not who I am as a person. And that's never who I wanted to be as a teacher. It's never who I wanted to be in front of my students or for my students. And they deserve better. Granted, my dad was a guidance counselor for his entire adult career, so for about 35 years. My mom is a speech therapist, but she works in a school. My grandmas were both teachers. Pretty much everyone I knew growing up was a teacher. My aunts, my uncles, everyone. And they got to coach and they just got to like enjoy their life. And it looked amazing. And I had an incredible childhood. I got to walk through the halls and see my aunts and uncles. I got to, you know, go to games and pep rallies, not only as a student, but also like as a little kid growing up. So I grew up in a school environment that is, for me, intertwined with like the joy of adolescence is being at these school events and being with your teachers. And I was lucky in the sense that I got to see all my teachers and not just as a perspective of the person who stands in front of me in the room, but I knew them as people as well, because A, I was blessed with incredible teachers, but B, there was that element where like they were my dad's colleagues. So I saw them as not just teachers, but humans, which was such an incredible experience because it teaches you more about the profession. I got to see this amazing work-life balance, but also, again, it just helps like situate you and realize, wow, this isn't just like someone who wants to make sure that I'm doing my homework because they're annoying. It's like someone who goes home to a family and somebody who has frustrations at the end of the day. So I grew up in a world where teaching was very normalized and I loved it and I knew I wanted to be a part of it. I remember being in fifth grade, like thinking to myself, oh, well, this is going to sound super nerdy, but it is what it is, guys. Like thinking to myself, like, oh, if I were to teach the outsiders, this is how I would do it. I just always pictured myself doing it. It's who I wanted to be my whole life. It's who everyone I knew. It's what they did, you know? And for a really long time, I loved it. I was with kids. I was talking about books all day. I was an English teacher. I loved talking about books. And I got to coach and I love coaching. And it was just incredible. It was so fulfilling. It was so satisfying. And the way I like to say it is, listen, it's not like there's never been problems in teaching. It's not like they never existed. But I always like to think of it, it was kind of like a paper cut. You know, like especially pre-COVID. Yeah, there was annoying things and they might get in the way. And every once in a while, ow, that hurts a little bit, or oh, that's annoying, but they would fade. They would go with time. It wasn't that deep. And then COVID hit. And I think that a lot of the little paper cuts became like gaping wounds. And the little band-aids we might have thrown on to fix them in the past just didn't work anymore. And that they didn't work for me. They didn't work for the environment that I was in, and yet nothing was changing, nothing. So these small problems that we had before had become bigger problems, and we didn't have any solutions for them. And that was taking a toll on my mental health. It was taking a toll on my physical health. And again, like I said before, it got to the point where I was not a teacher. I recognized I was not a teacher that I wanted to be. I was tired. I was so tired. I didn't have time for anybody outside of the classroom. I didn't want to do anything when I got home from work because I knew that I needed all of my ounces of energy to be in the classroom every single day. So I couldn't do anything outside of work that would detract from those resources. So I started realizing like, okay, my only life right now is this job. So I have to make a move. And guys, to make this decision sucked. Like my poor mother, I was calling her every single day, just like crying. Cause I'm like, I don't know what to do, blah, blah, blah. And I started looking for jobs, which was again, terrifying because I had a resume built for one thing and one thing only. I didn't even have a picture on my LinkedIn. Like it was a mess. The other thing is, unless you've been a teacher or worked in a school, you have no idea what goes on in the classroom. You don't know what hats we wear, how many roles we have, because to be honest, there are so many of them that they're genuinely hard to list. But I didn't know anyone who'd left the teaching profession. I didn't know a single person who had. I'm going to be honest, guys. I'm not the type of person who's like, oh, it got a little difficult. Like, we got to move on. I've never really quit anything in my life except for the flute in fourth grade because I was terrible. But this was different. Like, that's not how my parents raised me. That's not how my community raised me. I'm not a quitter. And so it hurt. It hurt really bad because not only did I feel like, wow, I'm like failing, but I'm also failing my students and my kids and the people who need me. So that made it really hard. But we buckled down. We made 50 different versions of my resume. So we had like data analysis. We had instructional design. We had learning and development. I had all these different resumes because we do all of those things. And then my mom nominated me for Brief But Spectacular. What that did was really amazing in the sense that I told the whole world, or like, you know, at least a few thousand people, that I wasn't coming back to the classroom. So I had to put my money where my mouth is. You know what I mean? Like, could I have easily been like, you know what, never mind. I think I'm going to stay. Sure. But that's not what we're doing. So after that, I had to really like saddle down and be like, okay, like you're making a move. And it was terrifying because it was either like at the end of the school year, I might not have a job. And I was lucky enough that I got an incredible opportunity at BU working in diversity, equity, and inclusion, which was something I was looking at, number one, because I'm really passionate about that type of work. But also as teachers, especially as a teacher in New York City, my entire world was DE&I. Right? You can't be a good teacher in a New York City classroom unless you understand equity and inclusion, because you have to create an environment that is inclusive, that is equitable, that is understanding of so many different cultures and religions and types of people. That's what being in New York is about. And that's what being a teacher is about. So it already becomes so intertwined in the work that I had been doing in the classroom, as well as some other efforts that I was doing outside of the classroom, like my doctoral work. So it's different. Are there still days where I miss being in the classroom? 100%. It was the first day of school last week. I sobbed for like 2 hours because I wasn't there. And it just felt so weird. But I get to pee whenever I want. And I don't have to tell anyone when I'm going to the bathroom. Yes, I miss teaching. And yes, I miss the classroom. And I miss my kids more than anything in the world. But I don't have to like brace myself for work, which is what I used to have to do. Like if it was a Sunday night, I was like, all right, like we got to gear up for Monday morning. I don't know what the kids are going to be like. I don't know what I'm going to be like. Maybe it's a full moon. I don't know. It's the day after Halloween. They're hopped up on sugar. There's so many different variables that you deal with as a teacher that you're just expected to just like roll with. And I totally get that in some essence, it's part of the job, but I think teaching has become so overwhelmed by duties that aren't necessarily teachers, that the job itself has become unmanageable.
First off, thank you. There was a lot coming up for me. And Grainer, I'd be curious for you as well. So last year for me was the first time that I had kind of stepped away from, I call it being in the muck, right? Being in the thick of it.
Yeah.
And I moved environments as I was getting my postdoctorate hours. And I had a very similar experience when the school year started of being like, Well, first off, I had the grief, but really quickly followed by the guilt.
Yeah.
And I remember when, you know, my first week, I went on a walk on the path behind our office here. And like halfway through the walk, I was like, I shouldn't be doing this. I know that my coworkers are not doing this. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting how that plays out. Grainer, but I'm just curious for you, like, what was it like when you retired and stepped away?
A couple different things happened in that transition of my life. I just want to let Michaela know I am a lifer, 33 years in the same middle school. I think I am probably the age of your dad or pretty close. And I just, you know, want you, of course, and anyone listening, and Jessica knows this, that I was raised in a whole different age of education. I kind of found the sweet spot of freedom and creativity and not a heavy standardized test push. And of course, I did not teach through COVID. So let's be aware of that. But I did teach my last year after my school was destroyed in a flood. So I got a chance to understand the stressors of life will never be the same again.
Yeah.
And yet I think I was able to come back and still enjoy my last year of teaching. And it was in a makeshift school. You know, we didn't have, nothing was normal, except I would say the saving grace for me was my staff, my people, my friends. We had a community that could absorb some of the shock that went on, and we were there for each other. So I want to say I got to have a very good end. My next thought is how my heart broke listening to you on PBS. I thought, oh my goodness, this is the kind of teacher I would want my kids to have. And she's not going to be teaching. And that's, you know, I know I'd love to look forward, but I think we have to look backward a little bit too. Like, how did that happen? I mean, what were those paper cuts that were not paper cuts anymore?
That's a great question, Steve. There's a few things, right? Like I said before, I think teachers' plates right now are a little too overfilled with jobs that haven't been theirs traditionally / really shouldn't be. Number one, one of the first things is student discipline definitely looks different now, at least in the school I was at. I was dealing with 11-year-olds who had been cooped up for a year and a half with absolutely no adult supervision and zero structure. So they came back in the classroom and it was genuine insanity. I have never seen anything like it. The language they were using, there were so many more fights happening, and not little verbal ones, like physical altercations. It was getting dangerous. And all of this is happening in the middle of a pandemic. But now, you know, their consequence is they get to write a letter about how that's a bad idea. And as a human, it's demoralizing, because you're telling that young adult, it's okay to function in the world like this. It doesn't matter if you make a mistake that is harmful to others, or that is potentially dangerous, as long as you sit and think about it, because that's what it was, guys. There was no real other consequence. Emotionally, I felt so stifled and frustrated. And with that, I have to wear a mask, and I'm scared that I'm gonna die of a disease we don't understand. So it was all of these little things coupled on top of the fact that we were going through a pandemic with everyone else, with half the support the rest of the world had. You know, I couldn't go home for my family's Christmas because I was exposed to COVID at work. And it's like, listen, these things happen. That's the nature of some jobs. I never expected it to be the nature of mine, right? Because when we think teachers, we don't think first responders, but that's what our life has become. I would go to work not only worried about what my kids are going to do that day, if they're going to learn or not, if they're going to have enough resources to learn, whether or not I'm going to be evaluated on their learning, because that was the other thing. We had all these standards and standardized tests and, you know, data points we had to hit, and then the world shut down. But you know what didn't change? Those standards, nor how they evaluated them, nor how they evaluated us. So I'm barely holding it together in the classroom. I got kids fighting left and right. Half of them are not wearing their masks. I'm terrified I'm getting COVID. And I got my principal coming in to observe me. It was like living in a dystopian, because I'm like, did you not just tell me 6 months ago the only thing that mattered was the health of myself and my family and my loved ones? But now fast forward 6 months, we're in pretty much the exact same position as a world, and you're coming in to tell me there's post-its on the floor of my classroom. And then, Steve, I think about like the fear of being a teacher, not just with COVID, not just with students and with parents, with administrators, but the fear of being like, I was scared to go to work because I could get shot. There's not many professions that say that. Almost all other profession that says I'm scared of getting shot at work is probably trained to be shot at work. I was not. I was trained in how to teach a kid how to write a thesis statement, not how to duck under a desk and stay silent until we get the A-OK that the building's safe. Like, I don't think people are understanding. Not only are we teaching kids how to properly use commas in a sentence, but in between teaching them how to use commas in a sentence, we have to slightly traumatize them. We have to get into an active shooter drill and then go back like nothing ever happened. That's not healthy for anyone. It's not healthy for the teacher. It's not healthy for the kids. But you are adding to our physical and emotional labor as teachers. But also, they stopped compensating us. In every other venue of work, if your responsibilities increase, so does your pay. Not in teaching, because every single year, my pile would get a little bit bigger. Every single year, something was added to it. And I didn't see those pay increases at all. One of the biggest issues that we're seeing right now is the greater society, teaching in general, you know, the institution that we have created within this country is expecting increasingly more from teachers every single year. Every single year. We are no longer just teachers. We are therapists. We are counselors. We are, for some kids, parents. We are support systems. We're doing everything. And we're not getting paid like we used to at all, not even close.
One thing that we talk, I guess more recently, we've talked about this dual relationship with empathy. More often than not, when we're talking with educators or those in education, the theme of I got into teaching because of the connection. I love the connection. And you've already said that today with my coworkers, with my students, with the parents. That connection is the empathetic connection, right? It actually, like, from a physiological perspective, decreases our stress, it fills our reward bucket. So many amazing things happen. On the other side of that coin is one that we haven't talked a lot about in education, but we are hearing it, like, as a prime example with your story, is the empathetic strain. What are the consequences when we are environments in which that reward bucket is not being filled up enough with the strain that also comes from empathy? Yeah. Empathy is not just this wonderful positive thing. It's tiresome, right? It takes from us. And so that was continually coming up to me. Like, this is really what we've been trying to highlight, of like, there are repercussions for humans in professions, not just teaching, in which there's not a sense of equilibrium between the stressor and the empathy. The connection and the empathy don't match up. So that was just coming up for me a lot when you were talking about that.
You know, and it sucks, because part of the reason we go into this is because we're empathetic people, right? You don't get into teaching if you don't have that empathetic side. Otherwise, you're just going to run for the hills, because that's so much work. But it gets to a point where you're like, I don't have, and this is where I was at, guys. I didn't have anything left. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anything left. They could give me the biggest sob story of a student and I'd be like, nah, it is what it is. That's not right. That's not okay. And that's not me. And that's when it got to the point where I was like, I can't do this anymore, because I don't even recognize myself.
Yeah. I took so many notes, because there was just so many things going off for me. And your articulation of, like, for example, managing discipline. If I had a dollar for every time I've heard an educator say, that's not the training I get in school.
Yep.
No one is talking to us as we're becoming educators on what is consequences, positive and negative, look like. How does this actually function? They're typically given it during their, you get it in your student teaching, and 9 times out of 10, it happens to be some form of behavior modification. Mm-hmm. Here's the carrot. Use it, give it, or take it. So that stuck out for me, of like, here we are again, that the entire evolution needs to change for how we train teachers to be teachers. The other thing that stood up, sorry, I'm doing so much talking, I should not do this as the host, is the linear developmental expectations that we have of students, and that our data is built in this very, it's either in either or, either you're doing it or you're not. And the linear expectation in general hasn't worked for, you know, numerous kids, including a lot of marginalized kids. But during COVID, it didn't work really for any kid. No one in charge had the, I don't know what, the whereabouts, the whatever you want to say, hey, these expectations are not A, appropriate, and they're not, the linear is gone. Nothing pivoted. And so that I've you kind of hit on that, but that was coming up for me.
Yeah, there was definitely like a lack of cojones of anyone being like, hey, we should change these because this makes sense anymore. Not that they made any sense from the get-go, but you know, an opportunity to reevaluate, and they chose not to.
Yeah.
I can see teachers listening to this podcast, their heads are snapping up and down and up and down, and because this is how they feel. They get this rupture really well. I know they're feeling connected to you on the rupture that is going on in so many of our schools. I was really curious, once you decided to get out, did it feel different?
Yeah, it did, Steve. It was like been lifted off my shoulders. It was so nice because I felt almost, I didn't feel like a first year teacher again, because you know, that energy, it takes a while to come back, but I could put up with like the stupid little things way better because I knew I wasn't going to have to put up with them again. So yeah, it definitely felt better. And honestly, Steve, I think it made me a better teacher because I also knew this was the last time I was going to be doing it. So I was like, listen, if we're going to finish, we're going to finish strong. But I will say this, when My Brief But Spectacular came out, I was really nervous. I was really nervous. I had told my school I wasn't coming back, but I didn't say like, hey, I'm going to go on like a national broadcast. I'm like, no. So when it came out, I was really nervous that my school was going to retaliate, that the parents were going to be upset. And I was really blessed in the sense that so many of my kids saw the video and so many of their parents had, and it took them a little bit, but they were so supportive. And I had so many kids be like, Miss DeSimone, I'm so sorry that like you haven't felt like yourself, or Miss DeSimone, we're going to miss you so much, but I'm really glad that like you're taking care of yourself. And I didn't expect it. So it was bittersweet. Like there was moments where I was like, wow, I don't have to do this again. But then there was moments like, I don't want to leave this. I don't want to leave this, but I have to. And it always sucks when you have to make a change that you don't want to make. And that's what happened.
So when the cortex cleared, what did you see that might be helpful for our listeners to know, who are many in the same boat? Mm-hmm. What did you see that, or did you see anything? Obviously, it didn't keep you in education, but you might have seen some things that, had they occurred earlier, just as you just mentioned, might have kept you in the classroom, might have kept you being able to do what you love to do.
Yeah. The parents and my colleagues were, and the kids were pretty incredible. I had some, you know, every single teacher's got a few parents. I had a couple parents. So what I would say to other teachers who are hanging on or who were like, I don't know if I should keep doing this. Your kids, even if they're not showing it, they love you and they respect you. And they see everything and they hear everything and they're paying attention. Even when you think they're not, they're paying attention. And it was just like, leaving them was so hard because especially at the end when they knew I wasn't coming back, they were like, I want you to know you've done so much for us. You're so kind. Like they see the kindness and that's what matters to them the most. So for any teacher that's hanging on out there, who's like, I don't know how I can get through today's lesson. They're not going to remember today's lesson. They're going to remember if you were nice to them or not. That's what they're going to remember. They're going to remember if you helped them when they were sad. They're going to remember how you treated them way more than they're going to remember what you taught them. And I can speak as a teacher and as a student, as we all can. I remember my favorite teachers are not the one who taught me a lot about academics. They were the ones who were there for me as a human. So if you're struggling as a teacher right now, do your best to show up as a human and let the content come second, because they're going to remember you as a person more than they're going to remember you as an educator.
Wow. Michaela, when you were saying students see our kindness, I don't want people to walk away from this episode hearing all these negatives. I want to give space and true recognition that for many, your story is the experience out there. For many, it's not. There are going to be those that listen to this being like, wow, this is a little intense. This is, you know, like, come on, people. I respect that. Bless them. I think what's coming up for me, right, is if you find yourself in these positions in which it doesn't make sense, I think all of us have been there and be like, this is backwards, saying it nicely. I had a supervisor years ago by the name of Megan Cook, who gifted me the wonderful question that I have used almost daily since then is, help me understand. Go to those around you and state the question of like, hey, can you help me understand? You know, Jessica clearly was pissed at me. She flipped my entire bookshelf on the floor. Totally get that there needs to be some form of quote unquote apology, but help me understand how that follow through also kind of bridges the gap between our actions and the follow through. And so, Grainer, that's what was coming up. Like, all these things that we can start doing is ask the questions.
Yeah. And I think, you know, repairs are going to take a minute because we have to fix a culture that's associated with education right now, right? Some of these issues are ingrained within the culture of teaching and education in our country. And it hasn't always been like this. It has not always been like this. But that's where we're at right now. I think one of the things before we change anything, we have to pay our teachers more. You can take things off their plate, but they're already tired. You can, you know, have tough conversations. You can adjust admin. You can adjust student discipline. You can get rid of standardized tests. That would be amazing. But they're already tired. So you have to compensate them for the work that they've already done. And you have to compensate them for the work that they're doing appropriately in 2023. I'm tired of these 1992 salaries. This is insane. So we have a lot of cultural changes we do need to make in education within this country. We need to stop shifting the blame onto our educators. We need to understand the purpose of schools a little bit better. You know, there's certain skills that are developed in schools and there's certain skills that are not. And right now, I think a lot of it is being put on schools and specifically on teachers and on counselors. And that's too much. And I don't think this is one of those things where it's like, well, if we just pay teachers more, everything will be fixed. No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying it's a start. We have all of these strikes going on around our country right now in every single facet of employment. And that is reflective of what's happening also in the education profession. We are also being woefully underpaid and overworked. And unfortunately, we have a profession where we can't really go on strike like everyone else. You know, we can't be WAG or SAG and nobody's going to premieres because then the country basically crumbles because nobody's there to watch the kids. So we can't do that. So we just need people to listen and help us. We need our policymakers to step up. And if you're not going to pay us more, can you make me feel safer in the classroom? That would be a really great start too. I think that's earned.
I find myself more often than not these days with this, and it's probably me being a little dramatic, which I can do just a few times. Steve, don't say anything. Oh, he's not muted for this. Everyone can hear him laugh now.
Yeah. Wow.
And it's been coming up more because I last year moved from Colorado back to Iowa. Mm-hmm. And in the time of when I grew up here, when I was little and left and came back, and I'm going to kind of fumble all this, but they're a state that just kind of began to give money to families if they wanted their kids to go to some private schooling. And so I have this internal fear that, and probably others do, but that essentially public education, we're going to kind of see disappear and it's going to become privatized. And then people are going to blame us, the ones that are saying, hey, the system has to change. And they're going to say, well, we changed it for you and now you're not happy with this. Like, I just feel like there's this level of manipulation that could happen in regards to, okay, well, the solution is to privatize everything. And then we're going to really see the floor drop for our marginalized kids.
Right.
That's already in a system that's designed for them to not be successful. So not that I don't agree with you. I totally agree with you that the safety has to increase and the pay has to increase. Like, obviously that's paramount. And at the same time, I do find myself like, I can just see people start taking this and saying, well, here's how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'm going back to my experience of the only anything close to the pandemic is, you know, the mm-hmm. tragedy that we experienced in our school and what was our focus. Our focus, Michaela, was safety for us. Our focus, honestly, wasn't prioritizing. Obviously, we cared, don't get me wrong, but our first focus was not prioritizing the safety of our students or how are we going to handle the stressors. They've, you know, a third of them have lost their homes. They're living in FEMA trailers, blah, 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 all that stuff. And our half of our teachers were as well.
Yeah.
But our focus was, what are we going to do to be the container that holds these kids? And we put a lot of effort and we had the right leadership to say, we are going to create a team that has each other's backs all the time. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, we had less critical incidents the year after the flood than we did the year prior to the flood. Much of that, I think, was because the focus was us first. And that sounds selfish, but it's actually very unselfish, I think. And that was our solution was, we will take care of each other no matter what. So, you know, tap out, whatever you got to do, but we're going to watch over each other. And that was very helpful. I will happily say that we didn't get scapegoated like you did. And that's what I'm really sad in a country that kind of operates on fear sometimes. The people in the middle, and that's the teacher, between the parents, the students, and then the administrative folks, you just get blasted. You in the middle, you get scapegoated because somebody has to be blamed.
Yep.
And it ends up to be the teacher. So I'm going to happily say we were not anybody's scapegoat.
I'm sitting here thinking, like, your community went through this tragedy, and instead of everyone just acting like it never happened and being like, well, let's go back to normal, you guys like banded together and rallied around each other to make it a safe, welcoming community where people could just feel okay for the moment, because you needed a moment to just feel okay when everything else was changing and out of your control. And I think as people who taught in the pandemic, like, we didn't get that. Us and the kids were put back in the classroom and it was go back to business as usual. And every single facet of the whole world has changed, not just us, but the whole world looked different. And, you know, it was so hard because it's like, how do I sit down with a student and say, it's important that you know the theme of this passage, when they're like, Miss E. Simone, we could literally die tomorrow. And that wasn't out of the realm of possibility because they were seeing it every day. I'm jealous that you got that, but I love that it still exists somewhere where your priority was not the standards, was not commas, was not little academic stuffs, but it was the mental and physical safety of your staff and your students. Not just your students, but your staff too, right? Because it's like the airplane. If you don't put oxygen on yourself, you can't help the next person. And right now in education, we're just putting oxygen on everyone but our educators.
It kind of goes back to the empathetic strain that we were talking about for the teachers, but part of that connection is also what we require and deserve from our leaders, from our districts, from advocates, from policymakers, right? Like, we have to feel as though that there's an empathetic connection towards us from them, right? Again, that's not monetary. That's very like human functioning 101. And it's not always the case, but you can find leaders that get an education that actually, unfortunately, don't have a lot of business being a leader in education for a variety of reasons. And I think for whatever reason, and that's a whole other podcast, but education seems a little bit more vulnerable for that to happen. Yes, it's the money. Yes, it's 100% the safety. And yet there are these kind of, I think, smaller environmental shifts that could, that can begin to happen.
Treating teachers like professionals and experts they are. Little things like that. Yeah. You know, like the amount of times I had like a new program slapped on my desk with somebody in some random office who's never taught made up. I'm like, did I not just do like a million years of schooling so that you could trust me to do this? And now you don't trust me to do this. So little things like you're saying, Jessica, like trusting your teachers to teach.
Yeah. Yeah. It's time for us to end. And we didn't even dip our toe in the other piece that we wanted to talk about, which is, you know, your cross-cultural communication, which honestly has a lot to do with what we were just talking about, right? Like, so
we got to get one nugget from our guest, just one from her equity and inclusion work, a positive shot in the arm.
A positive shot in the arm. I will say this. This generation of teachers is the most multicultural adept we've ever seen in this country. They can roll with the punches like nobody's business. I trust the current teachers more than I would trust most professionals to do their job, because they've had to do it in every single environment imaginable with no notice, with no support, no resources. So the current teachers that we have right now that are teaching our students, I feel like have to be the best of the best, because they're still there. They know what they're doing. They know how to do it, and they're passionate about it. So for all the educators that are still in the classroom, you are incredible humans, not just on a human level, but like on a professional level. You are brilliant. You are experts. You have persevered. You can do anything. But they didn't. And that's what I think is so incredible, is that they can do anything. They literally can do anything. And I don't mean that in a cheesy way. They can do anything.
That's beautiful. And their kids will know it.
Absolutely. Like I said at the beginning, we only met you virtually, on that video. And I told Grainer that, of like, nope, never met her before. It sounds dumb, but I literally watched that video probably 3 times, because I was like, there was something about just the rawness of it. There was something about your willingness to be vulnerable and to articulate the story that so many people were experiencing. And then I just began to stalk you on the internet, and here you are.
Yeah, you did, Jessica. This is a stalk that ended well.
It did. It did end well. So thank you for taking the risk to join us, even though you didn't know much about us and our podcast. And you're not in the classroom right now, but you are changing the game. And you are persevering in your own way. So I want to make sure that you know that, and that you are doing the good work. It's just in a different package, and there's nothing wrong with that. So thank you for all that you're doing.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll have to stay in touch.
Yes, 100%.
All right. Thanks, Michaela.
Thank you.
Hey everyone, I'm KJ Royalty, the Lindbergh Senior High Student Intern who edited this episode. Education Suspended is a production of Intricate Roots Educational Consulting Services. Our producer is Jessica Pfeiffer. Our Educational Suspended website is created by Grainer Media. Our production manager is Gina Hansen, and our music provided by Poets Row.
Kind and curious.